Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
On the Israeli side, the U.S. government should demand that Israel conduct itself with a future two-state solution in mind. We should not be forced into a position of unequivocally supporting the actions of an Israeli government that include bigots who reject the idea of a Palestinian state. Israel is a democracy. 5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
That was Senator Chuck Schumer just moments ago. And I will tell you that Noah Rothman is going to be with me in a little bit from National Review. A series of conversations about U.S. policy regarding Israel, including the building of this port hub for Hamas. And it is building a port for Hamas. I didn't know Schumer was going to do this. I should have expected, of course, that Chuck Schumer was going to do this. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. We're talking about the Senate Majority Leader from New York. It wasn't where I was starting. I wanted to start with TikTok, and I will get to it, because the back and forth on this TikTok legislation, and should it be forced ByteDance, the company that owns it, to divest and sell it to an American company because of its connection to the Chinese Communist Party, is a big subject. And as I said, my ears are open. Give me a reason why I should be opposed to such a thing. How is it not a national security issue? Ears are open. But just in case this is the only part of the show you hear, Chuck Schumer is disgusting. And for my people, if you will, if we all have to go to our fiefdoms, Jews who vote for him or support him are out of their damn minds, because he is not having a conversation about Benjamin Netanyahu, who, I can tell you, firsthand experience, my trip to Israel, is not liked by Israelis. There are plenty of people who want elections and have him removed. And remember, this is Israel. An election happens because somebody wakes up in the morning and says, sounds good to me. Israeli politics are insane. This is Chuck Schumer having a conversation where he does not state clearly that Hamas has to be destroyed and Israel has the right to exist. Israel's the problem because Netanyahu's the problem, and a new election will make it better because they have to change course because they can't go into Rafah, because I believe the Hamas numbers on death tolls and those Israelis are just no good, worthless murderers. Holy cow, with friends like this, who needs capos? Low life scumbag. The terminology I wish to use, I cannot use on radio. And out of deference for the stations that carry this show, by the way, thank you. I won't. I will not endanger them or their licenses. Ask me privately. And if you are a progressive or a Democrat who supports Chuck Schumer, and Jewish or not, I have words for you. Come find me. I'll tell you what I think. A speech that Hamas could have written. That was Chuck Schumer today. But America is talking about TikTok. America is talking about whether or not there should be a ban on TikTok. Now, understand that the legislation is not actually discussing an outright ban. The legislation, which I have right in front of me, H.R. 7521, this is like a page and a half, which is discusses the idea of entities controlled by foreign adversaries. The term controlled by a foreign adversary means, with respect to a covered company or other entity, that such company or other entity is either A, a foreign person that is domiciled in, headquartered in, has principal place of business in, or is organized under the laws of a foreign adversary country, B, an entity with respect to which a foreign person or combination of foreign persons described earlier directly or indirectly own at least a 20% stake, or C, a person subject to the direction or control of a foreign person or entity as described in these earlier subparagraphs. It is stating that a connection to the Communist Chinese Party or any foreign adversary, to which we have foreign adversaries, is a danger to America, and we simply cannot have it. We can't have it. So therefore, the company cannot work in the United States. It has to be divested, and then it can be acquired by an American entity. That's, in a nutshell, what the legislation says. Some people said that the legislation is too broad. As I know it, there was legislation previous, a couple years back, that was very broad, and that had a tremendous amount of opposition. This had a tremendous amount of support. This was overwhelmingly voted for. It is, as I am reading it, it's right in front of me, it is very narrow-casted. To protect the national security of the United States from the threat posed by foreign adversary-controlled applications such as TikTok and any successor application or service, and any other application or service developed or provided by ByteDance Limited or an entity under the control of ByteDance. ByteDance is this company controlled by Beijing, which means controlled by the Communist Chinese Party. Now, this gets weird because the people in opposition have a legitimate argument. They have a legitimate argument, which is this is step one in a measure, in a multiplicity of steps to try and limit social media or limit a people's ability to communicate so government can maintain more control. To some people, that's conspiratorial. To other people, well, isn't that what they've tried to do? You see, the government doesn't control TikTok, so therefore TikTok has to be ended or placed in a place where we can have control. Who is we? Well, to many people, the progressive left. Control from, they control Facebook, control the multiplicity of news outlets out there. Not talk radio. By the way, can I say for the record, I said out loud, when Biden takes office, they're going to bring back the fairness doctrine. Stunned that that hasn't happened yet. I said they would do it because I understand exactly what you're saying. I hear you loud and clear. I worry about the slippery slope. But I also worry about national security. China is a national security risk, and one should not allow the Communist Chinese Party to have access to data in the United States, to people's phones in the United States. We shouldn't allow it. There's another argument that gets made, and this is an argument having to do with who actually owns the technology. This was elucidated in a conversation. It was a pretty big back and forth that Senator Rand Paul had on Fox News with Brian Kilmeade. It got hot. I mean, that much is true. Let me share a little bit of it with you.
So, I mean, doesn't that concern you? Do you think, do you see a difference? Do you think there should be maybe a listing of nations like Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran that should not be able to own entities like this?
Well, here's the first thing, and this is the most important fact of all of this, and it needs to be debated, not assumed as a fact. The company is owned 60% by international investors, 20% by the two Chinese software engineers who developed it, the entrepreneurs who began the business, and 20% by their employees, 7,000 of whom are American. So it's a very diverse ownership. It's not owned by the Chinese government. In fact, on TikTok's board, there are no Chinese nationals that control this, that are associated with the government at all. They're CEOs from Singapore. So this is an international corporation, and like every other international corporation, they deserve their day in court. You can't.
Now, that's an interesting argument made by Senator Rand Paul, whom I disagree with. He is saying that if you have Americans who are investors and owners, the ask for divestment isn't actually applicable. That they have rights. The idea that the Communist Chinese Party gets their day in court, I would laugh Rand Paul out of the room. No, they don't. Americans do. That is the difference. And I would also engage with Senator Rand Paul that the idea of being at war with a nation isn't always a conversation of Congress making a declaration. I am not at war with China because I have declared it so. I'm at war with China because China has declared war with us. They have already stated so. Look at policies, look at procedures, look at statements. Israelis may think that somehow they don't have to be at war with Hamas or Iran, but they are because Iran is at war with them. These are the facts. But Rand Paul's argument is if you have American citizens who are in connection here, they do get a day in court.
Can't just take their property. Look, I have a lot of arguments with the Chinese communists. I have a lot of Saudi authoritarians, but I'm not saying we should allow banning anybody to do business with the Saudis because they have an unsavory government as well. Senator, they spy on their people.
Senator, did you see the hearing, or were you part of that hearing? I can't remember what committee was in front of, when the CEO of TikTok was there trying to rationalize why we should leave it in this country?
You know, I wasn't in that hearing, but I do know that they have been working very closely with our government to try to adhere to anything they can do to stay open in our business, in our country. They've offered and actually have transferred most of their data to Texas, to an Oracle cloud. They have review of the data by Oracle to make sure it's being controlled here. They're often go through what's called CFIUS. CFIUS is a procedure where foreign-owned countries are trying to work to have American boards. They've also worked
This is the fundamental. I know about the Texas project, and I wish it was effective, but it isn't. We put $1 billion into it, or they did. But they did. He could not assure that ByteDance.
Brian, that's your opinion. That's your opinion.
No, nobody thinks the Texas project did. No, but nobody thinks. Let me finish. Nobody thinks the Texas project is up and running and is effective. Let me just finish. They could not answer. The CEO would not assure that Beijing would not have access to personal information for 170 million Americans.
I don't think that's true.
Number one with young people. It is true.
Brian, it's an allegation. You are making allegations against a company owned by Americans, and you have to prove it in court.
Who owns that company? ByteDance is owned by China. 60,
no, it's not. See, that's a lie, and you're defaming the country. You're defaming the company. 60% of it is owned by international investors. 20% is owned by the software developers who are Chinese, and 20% is owned by the employees, 7,000 of whom are Americans. So it's
Now, a lot of stuff got thrown there. As I had know it via research, ByteDance is a Chinese company. And I think to deny that is odd. It's acceptable to say, well, it's got this mix of people. That's acceptable. This idea of the Texas project, this is a little different. This is, it's about how, I don't even know how to describe what the Texas Project is. I don't know how to describe it in like 30 seconds. But it's this is about trying to give briefings saying, hey, everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be good. So this is executives from TikTok who are trying to put out their guys. We're not what people are saying. It's all cool. It's all good. It's all fine. You know, we're just here. Let us assuage you of any difficulties. We really are a good company. You don't have to give us any limitations. There is a real disagreement amongst the political right about what to do here. I find myself on the side of national security. The problem with my argument. My argument is the argument that brought the Patriot Act. And you should be aware that I am fully aware of this, which is why my ears are open. Sometimes it's not a conspiracy. They're actually after you. But I know the mistakes that were made, and I have no interest in repeating them. So while I err on the side of national security and the divestment, I'm paying attention. And if you've got anything for me, Tony@TonyKatz.com, send it my way. I'm Tony Katz.
Prices are higher than when President Biden came into office. What do you say to the family that's having to use their credit card to pay for food or possibly could lose their home because of the debt that they've accumulated with the higher prices?
Well, I think the single most important metric to judge how households are doing is their spending power, their real wages or real earnings, namely their earnings adjusted for inflation. And the statistic that I think captures things best is if we compare where the median worker is now is compared to 2019, just before the pandemic, that worker can buy the same bundle of goods as before with $1,400 left over to save or spend. So wages have gone up considerably, and that's more than offset for the typical household the impact of higher prices. But
so, wait, are you saying, Secretary Yellen, that prices were better in 2019? Right? Better in 2019. But now that we are post-pandemic, we are back to having acceptable prices because of Biden policies? Tony Katz. Tony Katz today, as Fox Business host then says to her, which is a great, great truism.
And that's more than offset for the typical household, the impact of higher prices.
But in 2019, President Biden's policies weren't in place.
That's the story. That one can argue COVID from now until the end of time, the policies that we have are not providing value. The Dow is down 64 right now. The NASDAQ is down 50. And the wholesale inflation up 0.6%. That's where we are, kitten. We are nowhere near the 2% that the Fed wants to be at. Nowhere near it. And number two, there's no end in sight. None. So the Biden administration could keep telling us how much better we're doing against other nations, but it's not. It's not anything that moves Americans. And this is the same Treasury Secretary who said, you know what, I never should have used the term transitory for inflation. See, people thought that it would change quickly. They didn't know that I meant 3, 4, 5 years when I said transitory. She's embarrassing. Dr. Matt Will, economist, he'll be speaking to me later in the show. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer embarrasses himself on Israel. That story is next. I'm Tony Katz.
Five months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
I cannot properly explain the disgust I have for Senator Chuck Schumer in this statement, this speech he gave on the Senate floor, where a sitting U.S. senator decided to involve himself in Israeli politics, the politics of another nation, to say you should have elections, to basically proclaim that the reason, Israel, you're having a hard time is not because Hamas has written into their charter that you should be destroyed, is not the murder of 1,200, 1,300 people on October 7th, setting babies on fire, raping women, kidnapping women, the elderly, children. No. It's Benjamin Netanyahu. This further muddies an already complicated relationship between the Progressive Party and Israel, not necessarily the United States, but the party in power. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Noah Rothman joins me right now. You know his work over at National Review. He's the author of The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun and Unjust. That's his other book, Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. You watched the speech. You have now Mitch McConnell with some very, very strong words for this, that to say that Benjamin Netanyahu is the issue is certainly a radical. Make no mistake, says Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, Republican leader. The Democratic Party doesn't have an anti-Bibi problem. It has an anti-Israel problem. Your take on what Schumer said today?
Well, I share your frustration with it. I think it was positively grotesque. Yeah, he opens his speech, and he's done this for decades now. He opened the speech setting himself as the voice of a silent majority, as he says, of Jewish Americans, because his name derives from the Hebrew word shomer, which means guardian. And indeed, his relatives stood at the gates of the ghetto, and he has assumed for himself that role, Shomer Yisrael, guardian of the people of Israel. And it's for that reason that we should defer to his judgment when he essentially says that the only reason Israel is engaged in this effort of self-defense against an existential threat and is doing so with such reckless, wanton disregard for human life is because of the Netanyahu government. He's mangling Israeli politics in the process of issuing this theatrical appeal to a very small, very unsympathetic domestic constituency in America that Democrats have courted as part of their coalition. And that's it. Netanyahu is not the problem here. Netanyahu, he said in the speech, Schumer, that Netanyahu's government relies on this unsavory coalition of right-wing elements. And indeed, when he came to power after a brief interlude in the wilderness in 21-22, with the support of some ultra-Orthodox parties, some of whom have some impolitic views, for example, on the conflict in the West Bank and Gaza. But that's not the case anymore. Since the war, Israel has been led by a tripartite, cross-partisan coalition, of which Netanyahu is the head, but really merely a part. His chief opposition leader, Benny Gantz, is a member without portfolio in that administration. Yoav Gallant, as another rival, is the defense minister. And these guys have a profound say over what Israel does and does not do over the course of this war. Everybody has to agree before a course of action is decided upon. And it's, as a coalition government, it fights a lot. And we hear about a lot of those fights. But that doesn't mean they're disunited in the cause to which they are devoted, which is seeing Hamas thoroughly defeated and neutralized as a political adversary. Schumer wants to pretend and hopes you'll pretend and hopes you'll accept the idea that if Netanyahu is gone, suddenly you get a different war. You wouldn't get a different war. Israel as a whole of society effort is united behind this campaign. The whole point here is to trigger people who hear the words Netanyahu, Bibi, and just lose their minds and get all head up over the prospect of Netanyahu's, you know, existence as a political entity in Israel. But he has nothing to do with any of this. It's a straw man. And the whole of this enterprise is designed to appease an unappeasable rabble on the Democratic left that hates Israel, that wants to see President Biden divorce the United States from Israel. They will not be satisfied by this speech or any other. They want a different course of action from this administration. So what they're doing is aggravating the Americans who support Israel's mission, all while alienating the people that they're trying to ingratiate themselves to, the anti-Israel cohort, which, again, is very, very small. I have no idea what they think they're doing here. They're blinded, totally myopic, cannot see beyond the small contingent that they've courted as part of their coalition. And it's doing them no favors. Indeed, I think they'll come to regret it.
Well, this is part of the problem, Noah, talking to Noah Rothman of National Review. You and I agree on this topic. You and I agree on a fair amount. But I want to go back at you on the idea that this coalition of Jew-hating bigots, my words, is small. I can point you to any college campus. As a matter of fact, you can pick the city, you can pick the state. I'll fly us there. I'll find the college in that city, in that state that you pick, and I'll find part of the cohort of Jew-hating bigots. You can point me to any part of Congress, and I will be able to, with ease, find you the Jew-hating bigot. And when I say this, I'm not just talking about Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. I'm not just talking about Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. Let's take a look at the commentaries of people like Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. Never mind what Senator Chuck Schumer just said. Now, you may not agree with me on Jew-hating bigot there, but very clearly, we can place it into a larger category of people who are desperate to see Israel be the scapegoat, Israel be the issue, Israel be the problem. My point in bringing this up is that I disagree with the idea that it is a small cohort. How do you come to that conclusion?
Well, it's not supported by statistical evidence. You can marshal a lot of anecdotes, you have, and I wouldn't disagree with you. But the statistics in polling and in electoral counts and what have you, voting, doesn't suggest that this is a especially large aspect of the American electorate. Not even a majority of sentiment sometimes it's a majority sentiment among Democrats, depending on the poll. But they don't vote that way. And I don't think that it's fair to say that a majority of Democrats don't support Israel, because when you survey this, the polling, you can see, well, most Democrats think that Israel's, for example, gone too far in this war. But if you ask them, should Gaza be led by Hamas in the aftermath of this war, they say no. If you say we should condition aid to Israel, they say no. They don't necessarily want to see Israel lose this war or even stop fighting this war. But a very narrow contingent does. Those are the people who you're seeing on college campuses. They're not people who have nuanced views on this war, as Chuck Schumer said. And there are some. There are some Democrats who are of mixed mind on this sort of situation. But that's not the people you're talking about. You're talking about absolute zealots who are not of mixed emotions on this at all. They 100% oppose Israel and all its works and want to see the United States divorce itself entirely from its partnership with the Jewish state. I think that's who you're talking about. And I don't think it's fair to characterize the whole Democratic Party that way. But they're deeply concerned, deeply invested in the idea that this narrow contingent, which I maintain is narrow, will nonetheless tank them electorally, because while it is small, their whole electoral strategy in 2024 is predicated on the idea that they can win, but only narrowly.
I would push back again that if you argue that the coalition is small, it includes the president of the United States and the Senate majority leader. So I get your point. Right. And I love data, talking to Noah Rothman of National Review. The polling doesn't show it, but the voices are getting louder. And one of the things I brought up earlier is that things are getting muddied. You have a piece, at National Review, you have a couple of them. You have why wouldn't Israel welcome Biden's Gaza peer? And then you followed that up a couple days later with Jake Sullivan, the national security advisor. Jake Sullivan lambasts the press for taking Biden's cues on Israel's war. Now, this is what the national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, said the other day in the White House briefing.
Of the hostage talks. One of the things that I have found somewhat absent from the coverage is that what we are talking about in the first phase is women, elderly, and wounded civilians. Those who would like to see a ceasefire in Gaza. A ceasefire is on the table today for 6 weeks to be built on into something more enduring if Hamas would simply release women, wounded, and elderly. And the fact that they will not do so says a lot to me about Hamas's regard for innocent Palestinian civilians.
Jake Sullivan is having a conversation that you haven't heard from Joe Biden since the beginning, since really the days after October 7th, where he spoke very strongly in Israel's defense and has now fallen away, so much so he's going to build Hamas a port. That it's not a pier in the Mediterranean. I'm calling it a port for Hamas here. When you say Biden's cues, it is this is part of my argument that Joe Biden has shown that he doesn't have an interest in getting Hamas eliminated. He hasn't shown a strength in getting American hostages out, but rather he has shown that if you just continue to blame Israel for what has happened here, maybe you can get a good result, and that'll bring us to that two-state solution by some magical equation. No? Yes?
Well, it's very confusing because what you hear from Jake Sherman is what you hear from Admiral John Kirby, the spokesperson for the National Security Agency, and other administration officials, sometimes in and out of the national security establishment, who say that Israel's conducting this war justly and appropriately, and its objectives are shared by the United States. And sometimes you hear that from the president, and indeed, you heard that a lot from the president at the outset of this war. His rhetoric was right on point. It's no longer... And they broadcast these mixed messages because they're deeply conflicted over what the right course is here politically, domestically. They know, according to everything we hear behind the scenes, they want Israel to win this war very quickly. They know they need Israel to win this war very quickly. At the same time, however, they feel obliged to issue these perfunctory attacks on Israel as a political entity and as what it's doing domestically, or rather on the ground in Gaza, in terms of distributing this humanitarian aid. And what they're trying to do, it seems like what they're trying to do, is convey that they share the concerns of their anti-Israel voters who believe that Israel's not administering an aid regime here at all, which is just not true. It's just factually false. According to Israeli government statistics, the last time I looked at it, which I think was yesterday, something like 304,000 tons of aid have been distributed by 16,000 trucks, both through the Rafah crossing in Egypt and the Kerem Shalom crossing in Israel, which is very dangerous. Some of these missions are overtaken by desperate civilians who are in a very serious humanitarian situation on the ground in Gaza. And it's they're under rocket attacks, they're under direct fire, sometimes they get mobbed. And Gaza's a hellscape. Everyone accepts that. But at the same time, now the administration says, well, we're trying to, you know, we're going to try to help alleviate some of this pressure on you with these airdrops of aid and this port and what have you. And why wouldn't Israel welcome that? Why wouldn't Israel allow the United States to take some of this pressure off it, off its administration of this aid, which is doing so? It is doing so administering at great risk to its own troops and with no goodwill associated with it from the international community. We have some increasing reports and evidence that Yoav Gallant welcomed this, defense minister, welcomed this initiative. And we have some reports that it was a government, an Israeli government idea to allow Israel, to allow this kind of aid to go in. So there's a lot of weird kabuki here. And it's just not entirely clear who is benefiting from it. But it is clear that Democrats want to convey to the public that Israel is the bad guy here, even though they do something very different behind the scenes. I understand that's kind of nuanced and hard to navigate, but it just demonstrates that Democrats have no are very insecure in their political position here. They've wedded themselves to Israel. They've wedded themselves to this war. They need Israel to win. And it has frustrated a small contingent that they believe they need on their side in order to win the elections in November. So they're trying to thread a needle, and in the process making themselves look like absolute idiots and angering all the people that they're trying to ingratiate themselves to. It's their own cognitive dissonance that they're struggling with here. I really don't think Israel is the issue.
Yeah, we're going to need to do this again, because I don't think that's it. A level of cognitive dissonance, but I'm going to spend some time on that. What I think the argument is actually a little more simplistic. The Democratic Party will not throw out the hateful in their ranks and say you're wrong. They simply won't do it for fear of electoral defeat.
Well, nobody will. Not in this environment. Everybody believes they need every single partisan vote they have. There's no such thing as expanding the coalition anymore. There's no such thing as getting more than 50 plus one. Everybody fights on the margins. And so there's no such thing as a sister soldier moment on either side of the political equation. They must live with their unsavory elements because they have no understanding of how to appeal to the broad middle anymore.
That's the next conversation. That is the next conversation. Noah Rothman from National Review, his latest book, The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives, War on Fun. You can find that at Amazon.com, wherever fine books are sold. Noah, thank you. I'm Tony Katz. Are not going to South by Southwest. That's the big festival in Austin. South by Southwest is very cool. And you've got acts, musical acts, that are not going because it turns out South by Southwest was sponsored by the U.S. Army. And, well, you can't be a part of that because they may have supplied weapons, quote, supporting their violent oppression of the Palestinian people. South by Southwest must disinvite Raytheon, its subsidiary Collins Aerospace, and BAE Systems. And then it's Raytheon, Collins Aerospace, BAE Systems have direct ties to the arming of Israel, supporting their violent oppression of the Palestinian people. Raytheon manufactures missiles, bombs, and other weapon systems for the Israeli military to use against Palestinians. And we don't think that's right. We think they should supply weapons to the so-called Palestinians to use against Israelis. I mean, that's what they want to say. If you're a band not showing up to South by Southwest because you want a free Palestine, at least you're letting us know we shouldn't buy your work. I'm Tony Katz.